Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 19th of December. We are just 6 days away from Christmas. It is Advent time, and of course, Advent is the season as we focus our eyes on Jesus and the birth of our King that began this kingdom 2,000 years ago. It's a kingdom that persists and remains. It somehow continues to expand regardless of what's going on in the events of this world. It will fill all of the nations of the world eventually, and Jesus will one day return. So we celebrate the Advent of the past and his birth. We celebrate the Advent of his coming in the future. And that's what we do each morning here on Faith Radio Mornings all throughout the year. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by my friends Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, who bring news and guests from around the world to talk about all of the different kinds of news items and special interest topics that may be top of the mind for all of us from a distinctly Christian perspective. And as we get started this morning, I thought it would be nice to read a segment from a book written by Max Lucado. I'm sure he's familiar to many of you in terms of his long seasons of writing, and his writings and thoughts have made an impact, I think, on so many of our lives. And I remember reading this segment maybe 25 years ago and being deeply moved by Lucado's description of the coming of Jesus when he was born those 2,000 years ago. He writes this about that moment of time. He says, "It all happened in a moment, a most remarkable moment. As moments go, that one appeared no different than any other. If you could somehow pick it up off the timeline and examine it, it would look exactly like the ones that have passed while you read these words. It came and it went. It was preceded and succeeded by others just like it. It was one of those countless moments that have marked time since eternity became measurable. But in reality, that particular moment was like none other. For through that segment of time, a spectacular thing occurred. God became a man. While the creatures of this earth walked unaware, divinity arrived. Heaven opened herself and placed her most precious one in a human womb. For the omnipotent in one instant made himself breakable. He who had been spirit became pierceable. He who was larger than the universe became an embryo. And he who sustains the world with a word chose to be dependent upon the nourishment of a young girl. God is a fetus, holiness sleeping in a womb, the creator of life being created. God was given eyebrows and elbows, two kidneys and a spleen. He stretched against the walls and floated in the amniotic fluids of his mother. And God had come near." And that historic event is the crux of our calendar, of course, that we refer to each day when we talk about the year 2018 heading into 2019. It is that many years since the arrival of Jesus on the scene that changed everything. It is the crux of human history. It is why we celebrate from that perspective each morning on Faith Radio Mornings, continuing to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And so for this 19th of December, 6 days before the celebration of the birth of our King, we'll fix our eyes again together as listeners all around the Midwest, all around our country, however you're listening. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings.
And it came upon the midnight clear, that glorious song of old, and from angels bending their ear to touch their hearts. Yeah.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 10 minutes past the hour. We thought we'd get started with the news today by welcoming our friend Drew Griffin into the show. Drew writes for Providence Magazine. You can read his work and the work of his colleagues at providencemag.com. It is a journal of Christianity and American foreign policy. And boy, there's always lots to talk about in terms of America and the kind of relationships and impact they're having around the world. Good morning, Drew.
Hey, good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
Well, doing well. I certainly love this kind of season. I don't know that I always did, Drew, growing up. I didn't appreciate Advent maybe as much as I do now at this stage of life. Is it something that you celebrate regularly?
Oh, yeah. It's as a Christian, it's something that I celebrate and have all my life and look forward to all year long.
So do you have any special plans coming up next week as we kind of head to Christmas Eve on Monday and Christmas Day on Tuesday?
We spend time with my parents. Let them spend time with their granddaughter, which I think is them the most important thing, and spend some time with them and enjoy the season.
So, Drew, we have a bad connection at this point. I know that you and I often play a bit of Where's Waldo in terms of where you might be in the world, and you do travel quite a bit. So I think what we'll do is we're actually going to take a short break and give you a call back and see if we can find a little bit better of a connection for you, because there's just lots to cover this morning. We wanted to get into a bit of some of the updates on Russian collusion and how that's impacting the president and what's happening in Washington, D.C. And there are some significant events, the United States' support of the Saudi Arabian-led war in Yemen, as well as the split of the Orthodox Church in Russia. So lots to get to with Drew. We'll take a short break. We'll see if we can reconnect with him and talk through some of these really important events of the day.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. The work you do matters every day. Here's a reminder from Matt Perman, author of What's Best Next, How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done.
Well, I'd say there's one wrong turn we can make, which is to think that a biblical approach to productivity would mean not caring about the matters of everyday life, like only caring about the spiritual side of things. And that would be a mistake. God very much cares about the full range of needs, physical needs, social needs, as well as spiritual needs. And he cares about all types of work. You don't have to be in Christian ministry in order to be living a productive life in God's sight. The heart of biblical productivity goes down to the motives and the reasons you're doing what you're doing. You need to be doing everything you do, even if it's making chicken sandwiches at Chick-fil-A, for the glory of God and the good of others. And that goes to the really heart. Do everything you do for the good of others.
Matt Perman shares more at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back. We're trying to get in touch with Drew Griffin of Providence Magazine, providencemag.com. And, of course, Drew, technology is great until it's not. We really rely on these cell phones. How's the connection now?
I think it's pretty good. I can hear you great. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you much better now. That's great, Drew. Well, thanks for joining us again here on this Wednesday morning at Faith Radio. And lots to cover. I know you guys do a great job at Providence Magazine talking about American foreign policy. And related to that, this whole Russian collusion conversation just doesn't seem to ever go away. I cannot believe it's been 18 months to 2 years that we continue to talk about this. But it seems like some events are coming together. The Robert Mueller investigation may be coming to an end sometime soon. Where do we stand in this whole reality of Russia, United States, election meddling, all of that, Drew?
Sure. Well, the Senate just released a report on election tampering that was commissioned by this Senate Intelligence Committee and their Republican chairman, Richard Burr, which cataloged the extent to which Russia infiltrated and tried to influence the 2016 and 2018 election. They found that there was this agency, a Russian-run agency called the Internet Research Agency, that was composed of kind of Russian trolls. Trolls are not, you know, giant kind of mythical creatures, maybe for those who aren't familiar with kind of Internet terrorism. But trolls are individuals and or systems and robots and programs that can share social media posts. They can create news. They can create fake news. They can create fake news platforms. And this report just really cataloged the extent to which the Russian government used this agency, this Internet Research Agency, to infiltrate and diffuse false information, to exploit division within the United States, to raise fears amongst American voters, and to sow disinformation. 10 million news stories were released, 100,000 Instagram posts, 61,000 Facebook posts. They created 44 different Twitter accounts that represented, ostensibly U.S. media news outlets that were in fact fake, and they gathered close to 600,000 followers. What all of this kind of means and points to is a massive effort on the part of Russia to try and sow division and disinformation within the United States to affect our elections. I think that this is a different conversation. I think this is an important point to make from the collusion, the Robert Mueller, like that's its own, part of this. Perhaps, if the Trump administration somehow was involved, that's what they're kind of investigating. What this report that was commissioned by a Republican committee in Congress is really kind of pointing to is what amounts to, I think, or should be considered a real act of aggression, if not an act of war against the United States on the part of the Russian government.
Yeah, you referenced an act of war, Drew, and I'm curious how you're processing some of this, because obviously traditional warfare includes weaponry that includes loss of life then on top of it, and people battling in foreign territories. But this whole cyber warfare thing, it's almost replacing conventional warfare, and it can bring down a country maybe even a lot faster than traditional warfare might.
Yes, and I mean, this is something that, ideological warfare and psychological warfare have existed, I guess, since, time immemorial and all throughout the Cold War. Russia engaged in this type of warfare, as does the United States. It's part of the battlefield, and it's part of kind of where we engage. But I think we really have to take this seriously, and I think this report that the Senate releases should be kind of a wake-up call, hopefully to separate out, from the partisan discussion of, collusion and the Trump administration. And honestly, what often the Trump administration says where, Russia is not an issue and Russia is not a threat. I think this report shows, and it's a bipartisan report that was commissioned by a, Republican Congress and Republican Senate, that this report shows that Russia very much is a threat. They were a threat in 2016, that their actions very likely influenced turnout and influenced American perceptions of the election. They were an effect in 2018, and they will, take their aim at us in 2020. And so measures need to be taken. I think we need to prepare ourselves as a nation and as a voting population. And I think that at some point the United States should respond with either sanctions or some mechanism to communicate to Russia that this kind of action won't be tolerated.
Yeah, and Drew, and I've seen just cursory analysis of the kind of meddling and influence that Russia tried to perpetrate within the United States, and it seems like what people are suggesting is that it tended to be favorable to Donald Trump, and I'm not sure if that analysis holds up or what your thoughts are on that piece of it, but to the extent that it does, would they be trying to favor the president because they saw him as also being one who sowed division in our country, and that was really the ultimate goal of this meddling?
Well, I don't know if they would see him as someone who sows division. Based off of his own statements, I think they could have seen him as someone who would not necessarily be hard on them. I mean, his own statements publicly before and after the election towards Russia and towards Vladimir Putin were not really critical at all. And in fact, you could describe them as being obsequious, I guess, what might be a word, or, kind of passive. And whereas, Hillary Clinton, maybe for all her faults, was far more of a hawk in terms of her positioning towards Russia. So they may have seen him as someone who was, potentially more favorable towards the Russian government. But I think really, what we have to look at is the extent to which this infiltration and this espionage that was conducted on the part of the Russian government didn't have to affect all that many people. I mean, Donald Trump won really by winning three states by something less than 50,000 votes in those three states, in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. So it doesn't take a whole lot really to influence and sway the election for whatever reason that they did it. I think that rather than favoring a candidate in particular, I think what they are really trying to do is just sow discord. So they had ads and they had sites that were pro, Hillary and trying to raise fear about voter fraud in the minds of the Republicans. They had sites that were anti-Hillary and pro-Trump, trying to, you know, discourage voter turnout on the left. And so really, they're about exploiting the division and turning us against each other. And I think that the candidates and who the candidates were probably matter less than that.
Well, there certainly is a lot of discord that they'd be capable of exploiting in our country, Drew. We're talking with Drew Griffin from Providence Magazine this morning about some of the world events. Drew does such a great job covering American foreign policy from a Christian standpoint. And when we come back from break, we'd love to change the conversation and talk a little bit about the ongoing war in Yemen and some of the tensions that are going on between Saudi Arabia, a historic ally of the United States in that neck of the woods, in terms of what happened with the death of Jamal Khashoggi, the journalist, and what we see in that. And I know the United States is pulling back their support and what the implications of that might be moving forward. So more to come with Drew Griffin next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're chatting with Drew Griffin of Providence Magazine this morning, doing a great job covering American foreign policy around the world. And Drew, I've said this a few different times in the air, but I have to admit that when I first saw the headlines about the death of Jamal Khashoggi, the journalist from Saudi Arabia living in the United States, when he was killed in that Turkish embassy, I thought, yeah, this is a substantial example of human rights abuse, and it's awful and should be denounced. I didn't have any idea of the implications of that might have of the war in Yemen. I didn't realize Saudi Arabia was leading this war, that we were supporting them financially. It's really resulting in some pretty good global tension right now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The Saudi Arabia has been kind of waging this war or assisting the Yemeni government for the last 4 years as they are fighting against Iran-backed rebels, these Houthi rebels there in Yemen that have seized kind of the capital and much of the northern country. The United States has been supplying aid and military goods towards the elected Yemeni government kind of to phase this out. But with most wars, there's great humanitarian tragedy that attends them, and this is no different. In Yemen, we see this where Saudi Arabia has blocked off the ports in order to try and starve out the rebels, and this has led to a humanitarian disaster and mass starvation. Tens of thousands of children have died, and so over the years now, the 4 years that this has been going on, it has kind of risen up to the international and national consciousness that this is actually happening, that this is a humanitarian tragedy, and so pressure has been increasing really since the summer for the United States to kind of withdraw its involvement. And so, yeah, when in October, when you had Jamal Khashoggi killed by a Saudi assassin squad that was commissioned, as we've found out through intelligence reports, by the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, it really provided kind of an opening to begin a debate as to, you know, who exactly are our partners in this region and what are we helping them to do and supporting them. And so it's complex. It's morally complex. It's geographically and politically complex. But the Senate just this last week passed a resolution saying that the United States should withdraw its support, its military support from the Saudis and from the Yemeni government. And so it represents a big change. It's the first time since 1973 that the Senate has used its powers under the War Power Act to curtail U.S. military involvement abroad.
Well, and related to our relationship with Saudi Arabia, this is hardly the first time that we've seen a human rights abuse. That's pretty significant scale in which they do that historically, and yet this one seems to have broke the camel's back just a bit. But if we lose an ally in Saudi Arabia, however tense that might be, what are we left with in the Middle East in terms of partnerships besides Israel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we will, you know, lose them as a partner. I think this is a measure that we're taking really to just kind of chastise them. I think the partnership will remain mainly because Saudi Arabia needs the United States more than the United States needs Saudi Arabia. So I think that they will kind of, you know, curtail probably some of their efforts and kind of come to heel in order to keep the relationship whole. But yeah, there aren't a lot of options, and this is something that we talk about often, and that we try and stress at ProvidenceMag.com and our coverage of the Yemeni war, which we've been doing really since the summer. if not before, is that, look, the Middle East doesn't, and really the world in general, doesn't ever offer us perfect options in terms of partnerships. There are no, you know, perfect moral agents out there that we can just join hands with and, you know, run through fields of waters, you know, spreading peace. I mean, that's just not the way that the world works. There are complex relationships out there. There are despots that we have to deal with, that we have to sometimes do business with, and we have to navigate that. And the best that we can do is to stand for freedom, to stand for morality, to advocate those things, and to take action when we can, either to primarily stop, you know, immoral and evil action in the world through, like, military action and, you know, invading Kuwait when Saddam Hussein, you know, invades Kuwait and ejecting the Iraqis back in the first Gulf War, or removing Saddam Hussein in the second Gulf War, or assisting in the Kosovo War, you know, to ease oppression there. Like, there are things that we can do primarily militarily to discourage that kind of immoral action, or we can do it just through our words and through our rhetoric and through sanctions. And so there's no easy road to take. It's always going to be a winding road. It's always going to be a difficult road, but it's one we have to navigate.
Talking with Drew Griffin this morning of Providence Mag, providencemag.com, Providence Magazine, doing such a great job covering American foreign policy. And Drew, we've got a couple minutes left before we run, but would love to have you touch on what happened in Ukraine and the split of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church and some of the significance of that for us as well.
So this is a pretty interesting story. I mean, Ukraine is really contested territory right now. I mean, Russia lost its control of the Ukraine in 1991 when the Soviet Union dissolved. And when you have the Russian Orthodox Church, right, which is controlling kind of religious presence there in the Ukraine, and it's based out of Moscow. What we have here is that the Orthodox churches in Russia, because of Russia's the Orthodox churches in Ukraine, because of Russia's continued aggression towards Ukraine and taking over the Crimea there, have decided to kind of declare their independence from the Russian Orthodox Church. And so they have split and declared their independence from the Russian Orthodox Church. And it's mainly saying we want greater independence from Russia. And I think it's you know, whatever you might hear from Moscow, whatever you might hear from Vladimir Putin about, you know, a unity between Ukraine and Russia and the Russian people and the Ukrainian people, I think this really represents underneath the surface when you go to the kitchen table, right, or where people live, or the communion table, right, in churches, that the Ukrainian people want their independence, and they do not want to be under the boot of Russian rule again. And this is, I think, one of the ways that independence and one of the ways that freedom is kind of manifesting itself is for these churches to kind of declare their independence from the Russian Orthodox Church. So I think it's going to make the Ukraine all the more difficult for Russia to kind of take over, if that's their ultimate aim. And it's going to add to the division between Kiev and Moscow. So, yeah, it's a fascinating story, and it shows kind of the interplay of the kingdom of God with the kingdom of man in a way that a lot of stories don't.
Well, this is something I definitely want to watch moving forward, and I think after the first of the year, Drew, I'd love to have you back on again and get some updates on what's happening here in Russia and Ukraine. Otherwise, I really appreciate the time you spent with us this past year at Faith Radio Mornings, and hope you have a great Christmas and New Year ahead.
Thank you. You too, Peter. Have a blessed holiday.
Take a break here for some Lighten Up, Laugh a Bit This Morning, bottom of the hour news as well. And in the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Joanne Pittman, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the events in China and the persecution of the church there. Well, I see pretty big news coming out of Bettendorf, Iowa this morning, where camping out in the cold could land somebody free donuts for a year. The Hertz Donut Company opens its Bettendorf location at 5 a.m. this morning, so it's already open. And to celebrate, a drawing will be held for the first 100 people in line. And get this, the winner will get free donuts for a year. The store is located in the 5100 block of Competition Drive. Paul Perot, I think I might leave studio for the rest of the show, see if I can get to Iowa yet this morning and get part of that drawing. So I'm going to turn over this microphone to you. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Nicole Phillips talking about different kindness stories, and she was reminding us of some practical ways we can connect with random people as we might be out traveling during this holiday season.
The little shuttle bus comes up, and we all get on, and no one is talking to anyone. And I always walk up, and I make eye contact when I walk up to wait and see if someone's going to make eye contact with me, and then I say hello. So I'm making eye contact. No one's making eye contact back. And we sit down, and all of a sudden, this guy says, "Anybody gone any place warmer than this place?" And we all started to laugh. And we're like, and one guy's like, "Yes, I'm going to Florida." And another guy's, "I'm going to Texas." And I said, "I'm going to Fargo, North Dakota." And it was in that exact instant, like, we all became kind of friends and friendly, and we were reminded that people are kind. And so I would really encourage anybody who is stuck in an elevator with strangers, stuck on a bus with strangers, you know, sitting next to somebody in an airplane, to just be the one to say, "How are you doing today?" and really look at them and wait for an answer.
Nicole joined us for an entire segment yesterday, and boy, she had some great stories to tell. Highly recommend heading to myfaithradio.com and hear what she had to say relative to kindness during this holiday season. When we come back from break in just a moment, we'll be joined by Joanne Pittman of Chinasource.org, and Joanne is going to give us some updates about how the church is experiencing some persecution in China.
No matter how devastated you might feel when things are bleak, you must not stay there. This is Jim Garlow. When the U.S. entered World War II, it was on the heels of devastation. The fleet at Pearl Harbor had been destroyed. Our country was not ready for the conflicts ahead. Had we stopped right there and wallowed in self-pity, history would have been radically different. But President Roosevelt called our nation to prayer, and we girded ourselves for battle. The message for us is clear. Even though we too have an enemy bent on destroying us today, we cannot allow Satan to remain in our land without a fight. If God is for us, who can be against us? Individually, the same applies. If you've surrendered territory in your life due to sin or for any reason, God calls you out of the devastation. Turn to Him today. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
It's about 19 minutes before the top of the hour here on the 19th of December. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined by Joanne Pittman from Chinasource.org, talking about some of the events coming out of China relative to persecution of the church. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Great to have you. Happy Advent. Merry Christmas. Are there some specific ways you're celebrating in the week ahead?
Not really. Just spending Christmas with my family and probably eating too much.
Now, you before covering China in the way that you do, I know that you taught in China. What was it, for about 28 years or so? You were an English teacher in China?
Yes, I was a teacher and a program administrator and educational program director. And altogether in China, 28 years with some back and forth.
Well, that would have been quite an experience, I would think. I know that so many of our listeners remember time before internet and cell phones and all of these easy communication devices. I'm guessing, Joanne, when you left for China, it must have felt like you were leaving an entire life behind.
Yes, it was. China of 1984 was quite different. And I remember it would take 2 weeks for a letter to get from China, central China, where I worked, back to the Twin Cities, to my family, to my parents here. And then they would write a response, and I would get there, you know, if I asked a question, I would get it 4 weeks later. And making a phone call cost $3 a minute and required riding a bicycle into the city center. So we did it. I did it twice a year. So it was very different.
No, oh, wow. Yeah, you could hardly just FaceTime somebody in to experience a little bit of Chinese food or something along those lines. A very different time.
I prefer the modern era.
Absolutely. Specific ways in which they celebrate Christmas in China while you were there during that time, or was it just really not celebrated at all? My perception is, as a atheistic kind of atmosphere, that you wouldn't see a lot of Christmas decoration.
Yeah, in the 1980s, Christmas was not celebrated at all. It was not mentioned. We were able to talk about it in our classes as part of, you know, cultural lessons and things like that. But it wasn't a holiday, and it still is not a holiday. So it's a regular workday. I worked at a university, and they very kindly allowed the foreign teachers to have the day off, and so we didn't have to teach on Christmas. But over the years, as China opened up, and particularly as China developed economically and sort of became the manufacturing base of the world, Christmas sort of migrated into at least pop culture. And so in China now, at this time of year, everywhere you go, you're going to see Christmas trees and people wearing Santa hats and things like that. And they figured out the commercial aspect of it pretty quickly. And so, in fact, I was in China a month ago, and I already heard Christmas carols in some of the stores that I was in. It is always a little kind of odd for me to hear Joy to the World playing over the loudspeaker in an atheistic country.
Yeah, that is a fascinating dynamic. Of course, we talk so often about the fact that Christmas has been commercialized in the United States, but there are some Christian underpinnings to it. To be in an atheistic realm where it's completely used for commercialization purposes, I mean, what an interesting dichotomy.
And it's really interesting, too, as over the last 20 years until recently, as there's been more space for the church in China, that Christmas has actually become a time of the year when Christians in China do a lot of outreach because they know there's a lot of curiosity about Christmas. And so churches, like registered churches, will have Christmas Eve services, and, you know, they'll do 5 services on Christmas Eve, and people will be lining up to get in because people are kind of like, yeah, we think it might have something to do with Christianity, so we should go visit a church. So there's actually a lot of evangelism and outreach that's done in China around the Christmas time by churches and Christians.
Well, it's a fascinating thing that you're outlining here, Joanne, in the sense that when we see some of the headlines coming out of China, I often think about how the church is being persecuted. So how is this balance playing out for people in China that are in the church, where they're going to be experiencing some freedom to share their faith, and yet is there fear of persecution right alongside of it?
I would say that right now, even though we're hearing more reports of persecution, it's still relatively localized and targeted at certain churches and certain regions in the country. And most Christians, yet at this point, persecution is not the normal experience for most Christians in China. I still hold to that position, even though we're hearing more. And certain incidents do get a lot of press, and when something bad happens, you know, it's bad, and it should be reported at that. But I would say, for the most part, even though we're hearing about more, and there's a little bit more nervousness, most churches, both registered churches and unregistered churches, are kind of just going about things as normal as much as they can.
Talking with Joanne Pittman this morning from Chinasource.org. It's a great site if you want to read about some of the news coming out of China, understand what's happening in that country and the relationship the United States has with China. Highly recommend going to Chinasource.org. And Joanne, when we come back from break, let's continue this conversation. And you were obviously just recently there. I'd be curious about the reception of Americans in China when there's such tension between the governments and all this tariff and trade war. How are just regular people like us on the ground treating one another? So more with Joanne Pittman next from Chinasource on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're chatting right now with Joanne Pittman, who is the Senior Vice President of Chinasource. You can go to the website, chinasource.org, for important and relevant information relative to China. And Joanne, before the break, you and I were talking a little bit about the fact that you recently visited China. And I'd be curious what your experience as an American was there. I know Hallie and I lived quite a long time in Scotland, and there was always a difference between the political headlines that we were reading every day and how we were being treated on the streets just as normal people. Is it similar in China?
Yes, it is similar in China. There's a lot of, you know, headlines, and there's a lot of tensions and disagreements between the governments. But in all the years that I lived in China, I really only experienced friendship and warmth. Chinese people love America. They love Americans. And I really never experienced anything but warmth and friendship from the Chinese people when I lived there. And I didn't notice anything different this time. There's a lot more. I did notice this time there's a lot more political propaganda posters, you know, where 6 months ago it would have been an advertisement for McDonald's. Now it was some sort of propaganda poster. And there's, you know, there's more anti-foreign rhetoric that comes out of the government recently. But I didn't experience anything different this time around.
Well, and I appreciate as you're there, too, again, at the ground level. And we see these headlines about persecution in China. And it seems like everywhere believers might be going that they have to hide their faith. And maybe they're running through catacombs again like the Roman Empire. But it sure sounds like this is a pretty localized crackdown. And why would certain parts of China be experiencing a crackdown in the churches where other parts are not?
It's part of a broader crackdown on all segments of society. When the current president came to power in 2012, he kind of came to the conclusion that the Communist Party had lost a lot of its control over every aspect of society, and he felt that its position was threatened. And so he, over the last 5 or 6 years, he came to power in 2012. He has 6 years. He has sought to reestablish Communist Party control over every segment of society. And so in the early days of his rule, he went after human rights lawyers and then human rights lawyers and then education sector and then the economy. And he's just been sort of systematically going through different sectors of society and saying the analogy that I like to use is that all of these sectors had climbed out of a sandbox and were running up and down a beach. And he's telling everybody, get back in the sandbox. You have to get back in under our control. And so he's been systematically moving through society. And in the last year, a year and a half, they've kind of gotten around to religion. And it's not just Christianity, but it's religion in general. They've had some very harsh crackdowns on Muslims in the far western part of China, which is some pretty serious things that are going on out there that are localized. It's sort of a national security area along the border. And so now when we do hear stories of churches being raided and pastors being arrested, which has been in the news a lot lately in the last 2 weeks, oftentimes there's some local reason why this particular church or this particular pastor. Sometimes it has to do with local political environment. Sometimes it has to do with maybe what a particular church is doing, that they've become too big or too vocal or too organized, and that makes the government feel threatened.
Mm. Talking with Joanne Pittman this morning about some of the experiences the church is having in China. And Joanne, again, I appreciate the ground level look at this and that there are serious things to consider, but so often the news really kind of exploits those out of the ordinary experiences. I think often that maybe a million children are playing today safely on some monkey bars, but if one child falls off and hurts themselves, that's what's going to make the news, not the million that played safely. And it certainly appears that way in China. Is yes, there's things to be concerned about from a persecution standpoint, but to sort of exploit that for clickbait or news is something we might want to avoid.
Yeah, I would think so too. And it's kind of a delicate balance because, for example, there was a church that was raided 2 weeks ago, and it's, you know, it's a bad situation, and I think they arrested 100 people, and that, you know, there's no way I think that we can count that as anything other than really bad. But then, you know, when you start researching it and looking into, you know, there are a lot of different things that are actually really going on. And I think you're right that when bad things happen, they get reported. And it's not that they should not get reported, but we do need to be able to look and say, okay, is this representative of something broader? And there certainly is a tightening. There certainly are more crackdowns happening than maybe certainly 5 years ago. But I think we also have to remember, like you said, that still there are thousands and thousands of house churches which are unregistered, technically illegal, which are functioning right now as they're not being affected. So the persecution is one of the narratives, but it's not that it's a false narrative. It's just not. It's not the only one. It's like looking at a 1,000-piece puzzle and you're seeing only maybe 100 pieces.
Hmm. Talking again with Joanne Pittman from China Source. Joanne, just again remind our listeners one more time where they can go for some news out of China that could be trustworthy, credible, and from a Christian standpoint.
Well, I would invite everybody to come to our website, chinasource.org. And what we're trying to do is make sense of the headlines and provide background information, as well as tell stories of other things that are happening in China. So anything related to Christianity in China, the church, come on over to chinasource.org, and I think we can help.
Well, we certainly appreciate your contributions this past year to Faith Radio Mornings, and have a great Christmas, Joanne, and a Happy New Year.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a break here on Faith Radio Mornings and wrap up our first hour of our show and preview what's coming up in hour two for the 19th of December. Appreciated the contributions of Drew Griffin at the top of this past hour, just talking about some of the headlines from a foreign perspective and American foreign policy. And, of course, Joanne Pittman giving us a little firsthand view of what's going on in China. And, of course, the very important news that out of Bettendorf, Iowa, that there could be free donuts available for a year if you can get down there and sign up in the drawing. I think we're going to have a special report from our Iowa correspondent at the top of next hour. But we did get a text from a listener coming in saying, hi, Peter, Rachel, and Paul at the morning show. Thanks for another terrific program. One thing, though, we need a much greater time allotment when concerning possible accessibility of free donuts than just having this day off. Dude, I do not have my private jet gassed up yet. Have a great day and God bless. If you can get down there, Terry, from texting in and get us submitted into the drawing for your free donuts for a year, we would certainly appreciate that. Well, I'm looking across the studio at Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com at the top of next hour. Bill and I are going to chat a little bit about family cabins and some of the tension that can result from having to share cabins, especially during this time of year. And I'll also ask Bill about the passing of Penny Marshall and one of the first women to see a movie gross over $100 million.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.